You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Kicks this, he can shave whichever part of his body he wants.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. The Mighty Murph alongside me once again, putting in that mammoth Herculean shift as he does. Week in, week out. Oh, we gave you a little rest last week, didn't I?
I'm starting to feel a bit fucking Cinderella, to be honest. Gatlin comes on, and I'm surplus.
Well, to be fair to Killick, he's the one who bought
brokered Gatlin. The deal, did he?
he brokered the deal. Yeah, exactly. You know, he only deals in big money moves, doesn't he, Killick? So whether it's selling houses or securing guests for the podcast.
That is a coup, that is.
Not bad, eh?
Yeah, and a great interview as well, I enjoyed.
Good, thank you. Yeah, if any of you listeners have not managed to catch up on the Warren Gatland interview, myself and Dan had a chat with him last week, and I really enjoyed doing it, and hopefully those of you who have listened to it enjoyed it as much as Murph did.
I think it's the most relaxed I've viewed him in an interview. There's normally, you know, pre-match, post-match, whatever, squad reaction, whatever, kind of pressure, 15-plus journalists asking questions one after the other is normally when I see, hear Gatland being interviewed, you know. So to have a sort of informal one-on-one kind of thing, that's honestly, I've never heard him so relaxed. And I dare say people who've been to dinners where he's speaking and, you know, where he's special guests and all that, I might have seen him more candid, I expect. But honestly, he's normally got his game face on, haven't he, for interviews, let's be honest.
Yeah, and I did worry for a minute when we first, you know, he's doing that at like 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, his time, and I'm sat there mucking about with a microphone, you know, like I'm messing around with cables on the floor trying to sort the audio out. Meanwhile, Dan sat there perfectly silent with this gormless look on his face, just staring down the Zoom. I spoke to Dan afterwards, and he's just like going through my head. He's just like, Jed, hurry up, hurry up. And I was in my head, go, Dan, just say something for God's sake. But yeah, he was great value. So yeah, have a go back and have a listen to that, listeners, because we certainly enjoyed having a chat with him. And you're right, he was very relaxed actually. So great stuff. Right then, Murph, on to the, lock the doors. Don't let anyone out. 3 hours dedicated to the Dragons' win over the Ospreys coming up. This must be the first time, God, I don't know, the last time I had someone on to talk about the Dragons getting a victory, because the last time I did that one on my own. So, very excited to bore everyone with how much I enjoyed that. We're also going to have a look at the Wales squad that Wayne Pivac announced. And we'll look back at a win for Cardiff. And I'm keen to yeah, to get your thoughts on where their season is as they sit sixth in the league now, and another tough defeat for the Scarlets. So we've got loads to talk about. Where would you like to start, Murph?
Up to you, I suppose. I've only seen the tries from Ospreys Dragons, or Dragons Ospreys. So let's start there, because I can badge you for info then on that game.
Oh yeah, I'll give you a second by second breakdown if you like.
Go on.
No, it was, look, I tell you what, when they scored a try after 25 seconds or whatever it was, I thought, oh bloody hell, why do I even bother? You know, it was just that sinking feeling already. But to be fair, that was a cracking game, as I thought the Cardiff game was as well. It's just so much more exciting when games aren't hugely one-sided. And even the Scarlets game, you know, they didn't play particularly well and their discipline was poor. But even that was, you know, was entertaining. So it wasn't a bad advert for this sham of a league that we're in this weekend. But, you know, massive for the Dragons now, actually, to look at that and say, out of the home games they've played, they've beaten Munster, they've beaten the Ospreys, and should have beaten the Sharks as well, and Zebra next week. So realistically, could be three from four. Although I think the last time Zebra had a win, it was against the Dragons. So I'm fairly certain that they'll have been eyeing this one up, and we'll come to Newport, you know, with a.
But if they do get the win there, it really does isolate the Scarlets down the bottom.
Yeah, it's been a really
adrift from the other three regions as well as the rest of the league, you know.
Yeah, it's been a really poor start to the season for them, which we'll come on to after the remaining 2.5 hours that I talk about the Dragons. but massive, some massive performances in there. Bradley Roberts, aka Brendan Rodgers, I just thought was absolutely superb. What a great signing he's been. Just so industrious. And I think maybe one of his lineouts went awry, but his darts have been really good, and he's, you know, so mobile around the pitch. Grabbed a try as well. Fantastic signing. Harry Keddy getting his first game of the season. He was great. Open side, best game I've seen Aaron Wainwright have for a while. I just saw, you know, that much more athletic stuff. And Moriarty will be sending out a big message to Wayne Pivak saying, "I can't believe you ignored me," because again, he just got through so much work, and, you know,
full 80 as well.
Full 80, smashed into everyone, you know, exactly what you expect from Moriarty. And I'm sure we'll talk about that a bit more when we have a look at Pivak's squad. And yeah, I think the other thing with the Dragons, I know we've had with Angus O'Brien has been superb this season, and Sam Davis stepped in at 15. And actually it was quite interesting almost having like left and right playmakers in with him and Hanrahan. And I think that did help to a certain point. So yeah, huge result. Really happy with that.
To the untrained ear, this might just sound like an innocent question, but anyone who listens regularly will know this is a very loaded question. How did Roger Jones play?
The concept.
Yeah.
I actually, watching the game, I've literally only just finished watching it as well. Actually, I avoided the result and watched it on delay. I saw him. What did he go off after about 60 minutes, 65 minutes? And I thought, oh, he's gone off. I meant to make a point of really kind of watching him, and I didn't. So I actually, to be honest, I probably couldn't tell you. It's the honest answer. I could try and blag something for you, but, you know, industrious as everyone was. The scrum really struggled at the end of the game when we had a new front row on. And
that's in itself as a compliment to him, I suppose.
Yeah, and it was fine before that. So I suppose without me really taking that much attention into who was playing loose head, it's probably a pretty, you know, a pretty decent endorsement, because they were up against a very good Ospreys pack generally, but particularly, you know, particularly front.
Well, I mean, he's scrummaging against Tom Francis for the first half of the game. So
yeah, although a loaded question, I should just do like a player watch on Rodri Jones, because I know you're you're fascinated with this kind of the idea of what Rodri Jones is, as we all are.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously got ability and got qualities which make him end up being elevated to where he is now. But he's not on the pitch that much, and so the controversy over leaving Rhys Carey out gets even weirder. You could argue Nicky Smith has been playing better than Reece Carey this year. You probably couldn't argue Gareth Thomas has. And you definitely can't argue that Roger Jones has been playing better than Reece Carey this year, because he's only played 56 minutes today and 24 minutes last week. But there's an interview going around on Welsh media where Wayne Pivac is saying he just hasn't hit the conditioning or weight targets, basically, on the scales. But
that seems to be the reason, doesn't it? With look at you.
The thing is, from his point of view,
grenades to stop me talking about the Dragons here.
Sorry, mate. I'll get off it again really quick. But the thing is, if he's playing really well, which he has, he might be playing as well as he ever has right now, Reece Carey. Then, when you're in that situation, you don't start messing around with your weight.
No, because
you can take the edge off your scrummaging. It can take the edge off your
carrying
everything. Just everything you do, it can ruin it. So. We'll come to the squad later anyway, so I'll leave you. Let's finish the second hour of the Dragons.
We will, and of course, while we're talking about call-ups, Rio Dyer on the score sheet twice, including the crucial interception try, and really, really lively all weekend. Again, we're going to go into that in some detail when we get into the second half and look at the squad, but he is a massive asset to the Dragons, just having someone with that out and out wheels. And people are genuinely, you know, I think all defences are scared of him, because you just, that kind of pace is sprinter's pace. You know, we've said it about Lewis Rees-Sammet in the past, and it is that level of, geez, you know, the slightest error in judgment, and he can stand you up and he's gone and away.
Well,
and
this is it wasn't just the first try. Wasn't just out and out wheels. It was actually beating someone in a phone box and knowing exactly where his limbs were to get the ball down in the corner as well as the speed, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Luke Morgan, I think it was Luke Morgan in that corner who he kind of outsteps, who himself is obviously, another lethal finisher, sevens kind of specialist and probably, you know, probably a very similar skill set, although he's perhaps not quite as quick as Rio is at this stage in his career. But yeah, massive, massive performance from him. So much there to build on. Like, how many times have we said, like, they've got to turn Rodney Parade into a difficult place to go? And to be, you know, there have been some absolute toilet performances this season away from home. Mm. But at home, you can't really fault it. They should have beaten the Sharks. If they had 3 from 3 going into Zebra, you couldn't fault that. So get the result next week. And
where does that leave the Ospreys?
Well, I mean, I think they must be really disappointed to the start of the season. You know, we said this last week, should have beaten the Scarlets on the opening day, had that game won, should have beaten the Lions at home, had that game won, could have beaten the Stormers at home. You know, you can't grumble too much because it's a draw against the champions, but should have, you know, could have and perhaps should have beaten them at home. Excellent against, who was it, Glasgow? Yeah, Glasgow or Edinburgh, I can't remember. One of the Scottish sides they've pumped.
Yeah, Glasgow, I think.
And so, you have to look at it as a disappointing start to the season. Really, they should be looking at those games having won all of the ones they drew, possibly with the exception of the Stormers. And really, they should be looking at the Dragons going, right, we should be aiming to get a result away from home here.
Yeah, I think the kind of missteps early in the season is costing them confidence now, if you know what I mean. And they could easily be above Cardiff now. You know, in another Osprey supporters universe, they could easily be top three, well, top four. Just fine margins in games means they, and if they were, I dare say that would give them more confidence and they'd be playing better. That doesn't mean they would have won today, but just generally the way their season is going, you know. It's just tiny little things like the one game. I think if I said on here that if Anscombe was playing that game, they would have won.
Yeah.
And you can't play him every game, obviously, because he's, you know, well, you can't. These people don't these days anyway, but he's 80-20 with the WIU, so he's got to be, have his minutes managed. But the young kid, Jack Walsh. Yeah. I think even Myler, if Myler was playing, they would have won that game.
Today?
No, the game where they lost, I think that was the
Lions game. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Milo would have won in that game just by being so steady, you know. Now, that's not a dig at Jack Walsh, but it's just the pragmatic approach sometimes in those games probably would have seen you out.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think Jack Walsh has been an excellent addition, actually, and has, because Milo's been a really good, that really good steady Eddie 10, but he's not the most creative in the world. And I think Walsh has certainly added that level. And and likewise, I think you know, you have to look at perhaps the, it's very difficult because he saved them some blushes on the opening day of the season with that clutch kick from the touchline to get the draw against the Scarlets. He then had a similar one against the Lions, didn't he? Which he wasn't able to slot. It was either a penalty or a conversion. But I think he's been an excellent addition. I think he's going to be a really good signing for them. The strange thing with the Ospreys,
at the moment, he's feeling his way into it, if that makes any sense. Mm. And he's probably a year away from being the finished article, as far as 10 goes.
Yeah, maybe. I would say the strange thing I find with the Ospreys is with that pack, it gives you, it does, and most, because they've not played badly in any of these games, really. They've just not managed to take advantage of having a pretty dominant pack. And I don't quite understand that. And, you know, I just don't think they score enough tries. I think when you've got a pack that's as strong as that, not just in terms of names, but most of those games, they've really, you know, they've had moments either at set piece or driving line outs or the breakdown where they've been so, you know, so good and so powerful that it's given them a really good platform. And I just don't think they've scored enough points off the back of it. And I can't for the life of me figure out quite why that is. But it was another one of those today, really. To be fair to the Dragons, that this Dragons pack is probably the best I've seen for a long time, certainly on paper. And when they've got the first choice pack out, I think they do, you know, they do have that physicality. And we said a few weeks ago, they have that intensity, which certainly at home, which, you know, has been missing for some while. So, you know, it was a big, big battle up front today. And, I think in both up front and in the backs, the Dragons edged it.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I've seen it, I've been watching it after we record, so I look forward to it. I mean, it makes, from a regional rugby point of view, it makes everything more interesting if you take out the predictable fourth placed every year kind of situation with the Dragons. And it puts real pressure on the Scarlets, who are in a hole at the moment. So,
yeah, it does, absolutely. And I think just one last thing on that, the coaching change right at the start of the season with Ryan going, you know.
Is he gone?
I don't know. He's not bloody involved, is he? He's not.
No, there's been no announcement, has there?
No, I'd forgotten about that. I mean, I presume it's an HR legal thing that he's either on gardening leave or, you know, whatever it is. Either way, he's not, from a rugby perspective, he's not involved.
He's coaching the youth team for the rest of the year.
Yeah. yeah, exactly. And, you know, that clearly has made a difference. You know, I think the players want to play for Di Flanagan. And we'd heard players come out and criticise the atmosphere in Dean Ryan's camp. I had an off-the-record chat with a former Dragons player who played under Ryan and just said the atmosphere in the dressing room is completely toxic, and that was down to Ryan's doing. And that's the, you know, that's kind of what that's what you're dealing with. And it can, you know, it is that bit of new manager bounce that you get in football. I just hope they're able to build on it now, because it's been a tiring decade and a half of dross.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. It's funny. I don't always think that the coach sets the tone in the changing room as such. That's not the coach's jurisdiction. That's down to captain and senior players. So it's funny. I guess around the training camp generally is the atmosphere, but they must have been getting toxic because of the coaching. But change room is, you know, it's like these days change rooms are like freaking nightclubs. It's constant. Well, in the championship they are anyway, constant blaring music, lights turned out, God knows what's going on in there. It is a bit. I mean, obviously, any good team, successful team, has got a good atmosphere in the change room. But I always think that's player driven myself. I don't always think the culture's got any influence on it.
Yeah, that whole culture thing, I think, you know, it's that old expression though, isn't it? You know, fish rots from the head down. And I think if you create an atmosphere of, a tense atmosphere and one where players are either afraid to make mistakes or afraid to talk their opinions and overcoached and things like that, then I don't know, it can have that impact. And then, like you say, once you lose the kind of the captain and the senior players, that filters through to the rest of the dressing room and you're on a hiding to nothing. But either way, I think Di Flanagan has a very different approach. And yeah, I just thought, you know,
it's working, isn't it?
Well, it seems to be working. Yeah. So fingers crossed this carries on, because, you know, it's easy to forget there were some half decent results when Ryan started as well. And we kind of sat here saying, well, it's good, you know, you've got an experience coaching, back to basics, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, just hope it continues. And the main thing for me is you just saw the scenes on the terraces as Rio Dyer scores that try, you know, and the noise coming off the Hazel stand. That's the thing that you just want more of, because it's a reason to cheer. And then people starting to think, do you know what? I am going to go. I haven't been down for a few years, but I'm going to go. And I just want to be there. I don't want to miss out on it. And it just creates that momentum. And to be fair to Cardiff, and let's go on to talk about Cardiff now. I think they've done a good job of that in recent years. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but it seems particularly with those kind of Saturday night games or Saturday afternoon games, the atmosphere, you know, seems to be half decent down there. I bemoaned it last week against the Dragons. Again, that's me watching from the telly. But I think in recent years, that has got better. And it seems that, you know, for a game against the Stormers, the crowd were up for it. And even though it was kind of pissing it down, it was a good atmosphere and people kind of wanted to be there. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's in that.
Well, I can give you a bit of... not insight, I don't know, that's the wrong word, but
local knowledge.
My take on that is Cardiff, the city, is changing drastically. Even people who don't live here notice, you know, in the last 20 years or 25 years, it's changing drastically all the time. Not just the layout and the buildings and the skyscrapers and whatever else that's happening all the time, but the population is shooting up and it's lots of people from all over the place. You know, people move here for work and people move here for university and then never leave. So it's become, Cardiff has become less Cardiff. And also this is not a problem just in Cardiff, but every city you go to now is basically all the same chains of pubs, shops and restaurants in a different order. There's nothing unique anymore in the city centres. It's just the same, you know. I don't want to reel off the names, but they're all there lined up along bloody St. Mary Street or Queen Street or the Hayes. They're all just in the same shops. And if you go, you know, just a few miles away in Bristol, they got all the same things in a different order. So character is kind of ripped out of city centres a little bit. And I think for native Cardiffians, I think they've realised one of the things you can do that is a very Cardiff thing to do still is go and have a pint in the City Arms or some other old pub, like, you know, the Borough or the Old Arcade or wherever, and then wander down to the Arms Park, stand on the terraces and abuse the ref for an hour and a half. That is a very Cardiff afternoon out on a Saturday. I mean, very, very few Saturday afternoons I've rugby now at that level. They're all different times of day, but that is something that is kind of decades old, maybe even centuries old, across three centuries anyway, in this city. And it's one of the few things that's kind of still there. You know, Ninian Park's gone, you know, lots of different things have changed over the years. So it's feels like kind of touching base a little bit if you go and do that these days, because the city has changed so dramatically. I mean, even Sophia Gardens looks fancy pants now. So it's a fairly different place, but the Arms Park is a touchstone for the old days in a way.
Brilliant. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. It's a really interesting way of putting it. Let's have a look at the on the field matters then, because for all of the talk, you know, we've spent far too long talking about what's been going on off the field at Cardiff and all that kind of, you know, all that. The egg toss.
Oh, look, it's worked wonders. I mean, Egggate has worked a fucking miracle for them.
Yeah.
They've looked they've looked so well gelled and knitted together and got each other's backs since the perceived injustice of what happened that night, whatever happened, they got Edinburgh next week, and you wouldn't bet against them. I rate Edinburgh. I think they're a really strong side. But if they beat Edinburgh at home next week, they go... someone's saying to me they go fifth, but actually the Bulls are not... from what I can tell from the fish list, the Bulls are not playing next week. They got a bye week. So they actually go fourth if they can beat Edinburgh next week. Cardiff will be up to fourth. And I mean, that's nosebleed territory for the Welsh region at the moment.
How do we end up with bye weeks in a league with even number of teams?
I might have missed their fixture. I don't know. But the Bulls, I went through them all and I couldn't find the Bulls anywhere in next week's fixtures. So.
I mean, it's the kind of mad thing you would expect in the UFC anyway. But that's it, really. I think so much. The thing is, those two defeats out of the six, they were absolute garbage. You know, the one up in Scotland was truly awful. And particularly off the back of the win against Munster, you wouldn't have minded if they'd gone up there and lost, but it was a really awful performance. And the one against, was it the Lions, wasn't it? And the one against the Lions prior to that game was terrible as well. But four wins out of six, you know, if you're just looking at it on paper, you can't argue with that. And like you say, again, another opportunity to build on it next week. And it was by no means a first string side last night, you know, for injuries and whatever reasons, you know, you've got...
Yeah, there was plenty missing. Yeah. And also, you know, what put me off Cardiff's chances was the team sheet. When you look at the team sheet and it goes Kitshoff, Dweeba, and Malherber, and you're thinking, shit in hell. I mean, the scrum held up so well, the Cardiff scrum. And, the Cardiff front row that was there is not far off as good as any front, you know, Thomas Francis aside, not far off as good as any front row in Wales that the Welsh regions can put out. The trouble is that the Stormers front row is as good as any front row in the world.
Yeah, agreed.
Any front row in the world, any team in the world would take those three. And they did nothing against them. So I was shocked by that. And that's, you know, that I suppose that in a way set the tone for Cardiff being able to actually win the game. Because if they were getting absolutely stuffed in the driven line out, if they'd been getting stuffed in the scrum as well, it would have been very little to live off. And I think it goes to show, like those two props for the Stormers, absolutely outstanding players. But if you haven't got a massive second row partnership behind you, it makes no difference who you are. Exactly. So you had Marvin Ori and another guy who's, I don't know his name, but he's not a massive guy and not massively rated second row either. I can't remember. It was a Herbst. I can't remember his name. But that goes to show, you know, you still need, even if you're... This is the advantage the South African props have over the rest of the world, is they've normally got Etzebeth and whoever else, you know.
Diagas, Snyman, whoever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, all those players. And they got a head start before they even packed down. So, it was fascinating. Bruce Priestland just had a night of, you know, probably as good a game as he's had in his life.
I genuinely think the outcomes
he was getting.
That was 2011 form. I haven't seen him play that well since Rugby World Cup.
And ironically, the last time he played outside half, he was absolute garbage, which was the Lions at home.
Yes.
He was kicking ball away all over the place and it was just going, you know. Whereas everything went completely right last night against the Lions, everything went completely wrong. And when he got picked in the Welsh squad earlier this week, I said that's a really bad decision. And then, of course, he's gone and played almost perfectly last night. So, you know, I guess he's picked because he can cover 15 as well, which they got injuries in the Welsh squad. So that might be another influencing factor in his selection. But I was against it, as you know, because if you can pick 35-year-old Reece Priestland, you can also pick 34-year-old Reece Webb. It's a weird setup, I think.
It is, and we're definitely going to talk about the Wales squad. I think we're going to talk a bit more about Reece Priestland, and we'll talk a bit more about Cardiff and the Scarlets. We'll do all of that in the second half, but let's just have a quick breather, and we'll be back after this very short break. Welcome to the second half of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Just saying before the break there, Murph, I mean, you could, it was me joking about doing 3 hours on the Dragons. I genuinely think you could do 3 hours on Reece Priestland's performance on I was so impressed. And like you, I took one look at that squad on that Pivac announced. And I just thought, this makes no sense. You know, Okay, I get that you rate Priestland, and we all know what a great player he's been in the past. And yes, he can cover 10 and 15, but have you even been watching him this season, Wayne Pivac?
Yeah.
And then he goes and pulls a performance like that out, which was, I thought, you know, to be honest, Priestland had looked, I don't think he's had a particularly good time since going back to Cardiff. It's been a bit of a stop-start.
No, he's been nowhere near as, until yesterday, he's been anywhere near as good as he was for Bath.
Yeah, no, I don't think he has.
You know, and in a way, he started the season at 10 and played himself out of that position. And then Jared Evans came in and played himself out of that position. So that we've gone back to Reece Priestland and he's just pulled off, you know, that performance yesterday. So you're right, though. You know, when selected, it just didn't compute. I suppose it's been, if any of the other outside halves had been going really well, It would have been easier for Wayne to look elsewhere. But they haven't. You know, Jared hasn't, and we know he doesn't like him anyway. I haven't seen too much of Callum Sheedy. You know, and then you've got the Reece Patchell problem, which is an ongoing seasons long problem. So it was. I mean, I don't know what everyone's preference was instead of Reece Priestland. Obviously Dan Bigger being fit would be the preference, but I don't know. I just don't think, you know, he's been interviewed and said this 90% of what his World Cup squad will be. In this squad represents about 90% of his World Cup squad.
Yeah. Well, we've been saying for ages is like, you know, because he's picked Priestland most of the squads that he's chosen, certainly for games at home. And we've been saying the whole time, like, he's not going to make it to the next World Cup. Why is he picking him? Well, the World Cup is less than a year away now, isn't it? Or it's like pretty much a year from now. So
yeah,
he's just got to get through this season, and there's every chance he will. So, you know, to be fair, if that's who he wants to go in his squad, and he can pull out performances like he did on Saturday night, then then there's a lot less to argue with. So yeah, it was good to see. Is there an argument, Murph, that to bring it back to Cardiff, that perhaps Dai Young should be looking at just Priestland as a 10? I know he can fill in at 15, but should he just be looking at Evans and Priestland as his 10s? And they're, you know, and they're fighting for the jersey. And what, I suppose a bit like the 9s, you know, because Lloyd Williams gets a lot of game time at 9, either off the, you know, a lot of game time at 9, a lot of games off the bench as well. Should Priestland be, you know, either there on the bench coming on for Jared to close out games, or starting and then Jared coming on, you know, rather than this kind of filling in both in the side? What do you reckon?
Well, I think that becomes more possible now Ben Thomas is fit, because he played 15 last night. Obviously, Liam Williams getting injured straight as soon as he arrived makes everything more complicated for them. Possibly, you know, that might have been the plan if everyone was fit, that it would just be alternating between Reece and Jared. But I think they, you know, the previous iterations where it was Jared at 10 and Reece Priestland might have just been, they were the only men standing. So I don't know what the preference will be when everyone's fit, but you know, the way things go with regional size, you never, very rarely get everyone fit at the same time. So hard to say. And I agree. I would ideally, you'd leave them both as 10s, but, well, they have, you know, there's not a lot of other options outside of those two at 10. So, that would be the ideal, but whether it's possible is different kettle of fish.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Just to finish on Cardiff, I think, you know, because, yeah, I've laid into them a couple of times on here, and as I say, really, when you look at it now, 6 games in, That's a really strong start to the season, particularly if they're going to build on it next week. But I think you can tell something about a side by their scramble defence. I think you can tell a lot about a character of a side, because it is that. Yeah, and there were quite a few times where the Stormers made clean line breaks, and there was one in particular where I think it was Jim Botham got back to make that cover tackle, and there was lots of really good scramble defence. Turnbull again putting in shift, you know, and getting straight back off his feet and either slowing the ball or getting the turnover. And to be fair, I think that's something to be really, as well as the results, it's stuff like that that you think they're really up for this, because your scramble defence is something that can very easily switch off in a side that is just not, is really low on confidence and not up for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. If you concede in line breaks and everyone's just rolling their eyes.
Yeah.
You know, that's very telltale. What I will say before we move off of Cardiff is Thomas Young's unlucky, isn't he? With selection.
Do you know what? This is the interesting one, actually, Murph, because I feel on it, and I love him, actually. I'm really excited every time I watch him. I think he's a brilliant player. However, I think how many sevens can you have in the squad? You're going to have Tipperick.
Oh, I know.
Because he's Tipperick. And then it's a question of, right, do you want Jack Morgan or do you want Thomas Young and or Tommy Reffel? It's like, you know, I'm saying it,
not even know which one I would prefer he was there instead of.
Mm.
But he, to me, if you play in the open rugby, you know, in a way that PVAC wants to play, his only Tipperick is better at him than playing as a link man open rugby. Mm. Only Tipperick in possibly in the British Isles, possibly in Europe. You know, I don't know there's not many open sides over the border, and you know, they've got the more kind of Scottish open sides and more kind of battering rams and kind of
they're like wild breakdown dogs, operators, aren't
they? Yeah. Not silky smooth skills and outpacing. Thomas Young left someone, left Bertrand Hoo in his wake in that try last week. Showed real pace, like, you know. And he's not a puppy anymore either. So that shocked me. But yeah, I'm not sure who I would pull out for him to come in. But he is playing so well, and it just goes to show what the depth is like at seven again. Mm-hmm. Max Llewellyn's unlucky as well. I think. I mean, yeah. I know they only pick four.
Well, let's
pick four centres.
Let's bring it onto the squad now, Murph, because I can hold you like a dog on a leash, aren't you? Like, desperate to talk about this squad. So let's move on and take a look at that. I agree on Max Llewellyn. It's a very interesting one. Should we just have a quick recap of the squad for anyone who may not have seen it, and just for my own reference, if nothing else, who am I kidding? Just getting it up. Talk amongst yourselves. There's no one else to talk to, is there? So.
I've forgotten how to talk amongst myself now.
I know.
I used to be able to do that.
Could edit this out, but I won't.
Just have a 90-second Gatlin pause.
I know. Exactly. I staring blankly at you like Killick was staring at Gatlin. Right, Wales rugby squad.
Well, I can tell you the centres.
Yeah, I know. I just thought this would be a really great way to start it, Murph. And I've taken the wrong direction, but we are well and truly committed to it now.
We're definitely committed, yeah.
Yeah. What was that? Did you want to hear the squad? Yeah, great. Okay, perfect. I've got it now.
Yeah, tell me the squad.
Right, so in the forwards, the props, we have Rodri the Concept Jones, Nicky Smith, Gareth Thomas, Hookers, Ryan Elias, Derry Lake and Ken Owens. Tight heads, Thomas Francis, Dylan Lewis and Sam Wainwright. Second rows, Adam Beard, Ben Carter, Alan Wynne-Jones, Will Rowlands. Then Toby Faletau, Dan Lydiot, Josh McLeod, Jack Morgan, Tommy Reffel, Justin Tipperick and Chris Chunza as the back rows. Backs, Dane Blacker, Kieran Hardy, Thomas Williams as the scrum halves. Gareth Anscombe, Sam Costello, Rhys Priestland as the outside halves, Screaming Joe Hawkins, as I'm determined to call him, George North, Nick Tompkins, Owen Watkin as the centres, then Josh Adams, Alex Cuthbert, Rio Dyer, Lee Halfpenny and Lewis Rhys-Samet as the back three.
Yeah, and you know, the issue there is Screaming Joe.
Yeah. He's not played much, has he?
Well, this is the issue. I disagree with Steph Thomas's talk very highly of him because of the fact he's more of a footballer, sort of a 12 who acts more like a more like a 12 than more like an outside half than a crash ball sort of center. And also, he's not a small bloke either. He's got a bit of size about him too. So he thinks he's the future going forward, but he hasn't been on the pitch. You know, and if the Ospreys are not picking him, I just think someone who's clearly stepped up again from where he was before, like Max Llewellyn, is really unlucky. It's four games in quick succession. And I just think that, you know, if you're that keen on Joe, then I would have picked them both and put them in against Georgia. And then you got, you know, because the amount of time, actual games left now before the World Cup means if you don't get these boys, have a look at these boys quick, there's no time left. So, I think he's a little bit unlucky. He's actually, you know, actual playing time this year, he's ahead of most of the centres, not just Joe Hawkins. Joe Hawkins hasn't played much football at all. So, yeah, I thought that was a little bit... I sound like I'm being pro-Cardiff. I'm not being pro-Cardiff at all. But these are the players who have stood out at Cardiff, you know, really stood out in their first five games until yesterday. And the one who hadn't until last night, Rhys Priestland, is in. So that's where the contradiction is for me.
Well, this is it. You know, I was all ready to come on and pick holes in this Pivac squad, but seemingly he has some kind of clairvoyant powers now. And saw that vintage Rhys Priestland. So who knows what's around the corner from screaming Joe Hawkins? I agree. Look, I think all the attributes are there. Absolutely. You know, I agree with Steph's assessment of, from what I've seen of him, mainly playing for the under 20s, you know, and what a big influence he's been there. But you're right. I would have loved to have seen a lot more game time from him this season in order to make that judgment. Whereas Max Llewellyn, who has been, I think he's been excellent. You know, even in the games when, you know, that game against Glasgow, when Cardiff were really, really poor, he had another excellent game. So I don't know. I think it's very, very hard to make that. I'm not saying that Hawkins doesn't, you know, isn't going to make that step, because I think he might well do, but the sheer size of Max makes you think that it's going to make that adjustment to international level a little bit easier than if you're having to, you know, to kind of do the footballing thing. Because all the strength and the size and the ability, I think, is all there. So I would have picked him personally. Who knows? Now maybe with a doubt over George North, I don't know whether someone will get in
There is definitely a need for a football in 12 in Welsh football, and, you know, it's been missing for a long time. And so, if it works out, then I gladly accept that. I was wrong, but I just think you could have. I know they try not to pick squads that are too big, but I think you could have made room for both of them, because it could easily end up by, I don't know, the season after the World Cup. Like, you know, Joe Hawkins and Max Llewellyn could be your frontline centres. So, it's not that controversial. If Joe Hawkins turns out to be as good as everyone says, there's no controversy at all. It's just the fact that he hasn't been on the pitch.
Yeah, I agree.
He just hasn't been on the pitch.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because it's one thing that we always praise Gatland for, is his ability to look at a player and know whether he's international quality, you know, and was going to kind of make it the top level. You know, long periods where people kind of calling for Dan Evans to be, you know, to be in Wales squads, and he consistently missed out. And there's nothing more he could have done. I just think Gatland just had that view of him that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't going to be at the same level that those players who he picked were. And so I think, you know, I don't know, maybe that's what Pivac's seen. I don't know. I'm talking myself out of this, because I think both will feature in the future for Wales quite prominently. I think Max Llewellyn is unlucky, and Joe Hawkins has bags and bags of ability, and hopefully, I'd just like to see more of it. That's all.
When is he been in a regional side, in the Ospreys side, and you thought, holy shit, look at him. I haven't actually seen that from Joe Hawkins for the Ospreys, but as I have done that several times this season with Max Llewellyn, that's the only point I'm making, really. And I don't want to sound like I'm his agent or anything. it just seems a little bit incongruous. That's all. We better talk about the Scarlets because they're a bit of a worry.
Yeah, what's going on there, mate? I mean, look, it's a tough place to go at the best of times. Galway, as usual, the microclimate of pissing it down was in full force. And people still turn out to watch it. It's brilliant. I think that's again, you clearly
new surface know, as well.
New surface, I think, definitely makes a difference. How playing it on that on that artificial stuff.
And the other thing I heard recently, I don't know if maybe everyone knows this as well, but it was news to me. That ground belongs to the dog track, not to the rugby club.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Which makes sense in Ireland because it's much more popular dog racing than rugby union.
Historically, historically, it certainly was. Particularly in those parts. So yeah, look, it is a tough place to go, but it's been a bloody awful start to the season for Dwayne Peel and his side, isn't it? It's worrying.
It's really worrying. Look, they've still got a few weeks without their big boys, the two suspended players. 3 weeks on one of them, and I'm not sure how much Fifita Goffer is. So they're going to be out for a while. And actually, I thought the replacements, Rawlins and Price, is it? I thought they went really well on the Friday night. But aside from the Steph Evans try and a couple of the decent bits, even at their lowest in the, like I said this before, even the lowest in the past, you could always rely on their backs to come up with something, even if they were getting no ball or on the back foot all the time or whatever. There would always be some kind of spark behind. There's been so little behind that the other week when I said if they lose to Zebre, which is a stupid thing to say because Zebre don't win away, it was kind of inspired by the fact that Zebre had been scoring like 39 points at home to Leinster and losing by 2 points and you know, really playing some rugby. So in a way, that makes them in better form than the Scarlets. The Scarlets aren't playing like that. They're not scoring 40 points and finding a way to lose, you know, albeit, you know. So that's why I asked the question. If, as it turns out, it was comfortable for the Scarlets, but if that had gone wrong, you'd have to say Dwayne Peel's under pressure. And the trouble is, if they've just lost to Connaught away, I don't know if they play him again this year because it's conferences and, you know, you don't play everyone twice, do you?
Yeah, don't you?
Well, you do.
Or do you not?
Not everyone. I don't know. It's too big getting to play everyone twice. You don't? Oh, yeah, okay. Well, anyway, my point is, how many sides, looking at the league now, how many sides do you think the Scarlets are going to beat? You wouldn't fancy him at the Dragons away. But that leaves Zebre away and it leaves Connaught at home. Obviously, the derbies are always close. But as they are now, unless they make a dramatic improvement, and you know, in fairness, they couldn't play much worse than they are at the moment. You're struggling to see where their wins are coming from at the moment. Unless, you know, they get through this period without their two big boys and then turn it around from there, you can't really see, like Benetton, and they're not going to beat Benetton. So where, you know, there might be Cardiff, say, or there might be the Ospreys in a derby, but there's not, it's difficult to envisage, as things are, it's difficult to envisage where they win any games at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question of whether they've got to be targeting those home games. It makes such a difference, doesn't it? You know, like you say, when you go on those mini tours to South Africa, you're not expecting to get much out of it. Winning away in Ireland is very, very hard to do. But look, you know, could they go on a bit of a run? If they rediscover form, could they beat Glasgow or Edinburgh at home? Yes. So I think it's difficult. But right now, it's hard to see. I agree, it's hard to see where that's coming from.
You know, there's very little going right at the moment. They're not playing well up front. They're not playing well behind. He's really under pressure, I think, the coach. Whereas in the past, they could always turn it on now and again, even without any possession. It just didn't seem to have that. They don't seem to have that ability anymore. So I'm a little bit worried. And you know, the type of people who I think could inspire it are getting a bit old. And the other people who I think are inspired are always injured, like Rhys Patchell. Yeah. So Yeah, I think I must be some. There must be fans on there properly worried. Like Matthew Jones, for example, who comes on here, he must be a little bit depressed.
I know. I should have messaged him for this actually, because I'm sure he's got an opinion or two around that. Because it's a really bad start. You know, I think that the fact that it is Dwayne Peel for two reasons. Obviously, you know, he's a local hero for a start, so that's going to buy him a bit more time. But secondly, I think, you know, his stock when he arrived as a coach, you know, coming in from Ulster was pretty high versus if he was a John Mulvihill style character who's, you know, coming
an unknown foreigner.
Yeah. Who was the Kiwi who took over after Bradmore there? I can't remember his name now.
Oh yeah. He was in the back room.
Anyway,
Delaney.
That's right. Delaney. And yeah, I think that, you know, that buys Dwayne Peel a bit more time, but yeah, something's got to pick up, because it looks really ugly at the moment. And yeah, tough place to go, blah, blah, blah. But they just need to find some wins at somewhere. And I think it's Leinster at home next week, which is the last.
Well, this is it. This is the problem. You know, they've had a kind of a fairly steady run of teams, and now they're going to go into a tougher run. And in fairness, with regards to Cardiff, if they win next week, they could end up fourth. If they don't win, like I say, Edinburgh, a really strong side. If they don't win next week, they're then going on the next fixture is away in South Africa for two games.
Yeah.
So it could easily go back to square one again at Cardiff, no problem at all. But at least, you know, they've got whatever happens, you can't take those four wins away from them this early in the season. So
yeah, absolutely. Just while you were talking there, Murph, to clarify the point about home and away, you're absolutely right. You play all the sides in your, you know, your regional pool, home and away, why would you play sides home and away these days? That's I know it'd be
well, it is, you know, it is a big league.
Yes, I know, a big confusing, inflated league. But there we go. Right, let's go back to the squad then. Any other omissions? I think Keelan Giles can feel pretty hard done by, if I'm honest.
So can Ryan Combier, I think. Rio Dyer was probably the one who got the nod over them, and he's celebrated that with two tries today, and you can't argue, really. The other two, in fairness, have been looked at in the past. They've had caps. So
I don't know. Has Keelan Giles got on the pitch?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's been on a tour, yeah.
Yeah, I know he got parachuted
when he was still, you know, in primary school. He was touring with Wales.
Yeah, but I don't know whether he got on the pitch.
Oh, right. No, he may be. I'm sure he's got a cap, though. I mean,
don't know. Maybe against Japan or something.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he hasn't got. He hasn't got a Welsh cap, actually.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So he went on a tour and he didn't play. Yeah, I know he went on one tour. Yeah.
Yeah, he did, and then he played. He was on the bench against Japan. Do you remember that awful game in 2016? I think Sam Davis either won it or drew it with a last-minute drop goal. It was a bloody horrible game of rugby. But Giles was an unused replacement on the bench there, which is a bit of a rarity in this day and age. Mm. But yeah, like I. Thing is, obviously, you know, particularly after today, I'm a massive fan of Rio Dyer and he's a hugely exciting player. I would argue that Keelan Giles is the more complete player right now.
Well, you say that, but like a lot these days, it's not just, you know, finishing ability and defensive. Mm. It's under the high ball, especially under attacking high balls when you're kicking to compete. Rio is a really strong operator there, and Keelan's got
a lot shorter as well, isn't he, Keelan Giles?
Yeah, and he's got a bit of an error in him as well defensively, I think, on the high balls. That might be just my feeling, might be complete shite. But I personally would have gone Ryan Combier myself. I think he's been a real handful in, you know, beating people in narrow spaces and creating problems every time he's got the ball. I think he's one of the few bright spots for the Scarlets. But again, he's been looked at before. Tom Rogers injured, but I mean, they picked Alex Cuthbert injured. I would have gone Tom Rogers injured. Depends how long he's out for, obviously. But
Yeah, well, there's more injury worries as well now off the back of the weekend. Derry Lake and George North. Am I missing someone else? I know Halaholo went off injured, but obviously wasn't in the squad anyway. So there's a few potential headaches there. That would be particularly gutting for North because he was really, really good today. Not just in attack, but there was some brilliant defensive work.
What injury was it?
Don't
tell me it was his knee because I'm not interested.
Do you know what? Because I was watching the game in such a hurry to get through it, I don't know. I'll have to have a look for you. God, this
they don't say anything until the day after, anyway, do they?
Yeah.
To live assessed.
This is about as professional as this podcast gets, isn't it? Me furiously having a look on BBC News to see. So Derry Lake, I know, went off, looked like a kind of shouldery type injury, to knock early doors, and went off with his arm in a sling. And then George North. Well, people can look it up. They don't need me to tell them this, do they? But who would you see kind of going into those squads? What do you reckon? You know, like if you're going to have to call players up, I would argue that Bradley Roberts did a pretty good audition today and the previous 5 weeks to be the hooker replacement.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I'd say he was on his own. If you were looking for any hooker, that no one else has stood out as anyway anything like us. But there's been competent performances, but no one stood out like Bradley Roberts have. Mm. And he's got a sick South African accent I've just discovered today.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all. He probably, Ken Owens has been brought back in, hasn't he? Mm. Otherwise, Bradley Roberts, you know, if Ken was still injured, Bradley would also be in. We can't really argue with that, I don't think, too much.
No.
Ken Owen. And in the centre, I don't know.
maybe it's a Max Llewellyn look, you know.
Maybe. but there's the issue where Max is normally playing 12. He has played 13, I think.
He played 13. Did he not play 13?
I think he started 13 and then moved
in.
Oh,
yeah.
Mason Grady. So he's obviously, you know, he's ambidextrous as far as playing centre goes. But, it would be a big blow, I think, losing George. I think he's a really solid presence now for Wales and for Ospreys.
Well, the bad news is it is a knee injury. That's not something that you want to see. Not ideal. We'll see, man. Hopefully he'll be all right. I think Toby Booth, again, just judging by the news reports, seemed to be kind of fairly cautious, cautiously optimistic. So in an ideal world, he'd be fit. Because again, it's just, as much as anything, it's that experience. Like, there's no other centre you could call upon who's got that level of experience, is there? I don't think. Unless you were going to go for Scott Williams or someone, but he's, you know, barely played. And Jonathan Davis. I think both of those have been discarded by Pivac, I would say.
Yeah. And I don't entirely disagree with him on a rare occasion. I don't disagree there, because age is just catching up with them, and that happens to the absolute best players. You know, it's just a fact of life. George North, with his history, any slight twinge in his knee, you're going to bring him off.
Mm. Yeah, maybe
because
that's
of, you know, the amount of surgery and time out he's had with his knee. So hopefully that's all there is a twinge.
Yeah, and because there's a couple of other players, as you mentioned, in the squad who are carrying knocks. You know, Toby's got a calf strain. Josh Adams a wrist injury, and who have I missed? Like you said, Cuthbert as well.
It's not as bad as last year when you picked people who hadn't played all year.
Yeah, that
because they were injured.
Yeah, including Toby, who hadn't even trained, I don't think. Which was completely bizarre. But just on that number eight point, I know this is a bit of a go-to for us, isn't it? Is talking about the lack of depth at number eight. That makes the back row selections a little bit more puzzling for me. I don't see why you wouldn't have more. I really hope Josh McLeod gets his cap, because God knows he's been unlucky enough. And I know you don't need him to play seven, because there's enough sevens in the squad. Yes, he can do six and eight, but so can Moriarty, and he's got much more experience and he's been playing well this season. So I found that one a bit of a puzzler.
And Moriarty backed that up today as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
He's got away with Reece Priestland. Let's just say that. He's got away with Reece Priestland.
And Rio Dyer based on today's performances. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't against Rio as such, but it does puzzle me Reece Priestland because he's 36 next World Cup. And if you can pick Reece Priestland, you can pick Reece Webb.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. A couple of quick listeners' questions to finish, Murph. Barry the Puppy, are you guys excited to see Lewis Rees-Sammet at fullback, which is something that has been mooted, particularly given the fact that no one's fit? You're not?
No, I want him on the wing. I don't want to see him at fullback. I think you bury him in work if he's fullback, covering in the backfield all the time. I know, obviously, wingers do their share of that as well. The pendulum nonsense, you know what I mean? But I would rather he stayed on his wing.
Fair enough. Well, that's a really simple answer. There you go. Bang. Done. I think we've covered this one from Richard Idris Jones. With Zebra next week, is this a great opportunity for the Dragons to make it two in a row and three home wins this season? also a great win for Cardiff against the Stormers. Perhaps West isn't always best. I steer clear of anything parochial when it comes to this podcast.
Especially with our accents.
But what I will say is this quick question in from Peter Davis, who's a Scarlets fan. Are the Dragons now officially the best region in Wales? I think we can all agree they are. So there, that's settled.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue.
I'm joking, of course. But big opportunity next week for the sides based in East Wales, as we've said. So we'll be back to review that and plenty more as well. Murph, thank you as always for the...
Welcome.
For your company on a Sunday evening. Thank you to everyone for listening. If you haven't listened to the Warren Gatland interview, please go back and do so. Likewise, if you haven't listened to the one with Scott Otten, go back and have a little listen to that too. And of course, a big thanks to Scott for A, coming on, and B, also for sponsoring us for the last few years with his company, So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great coffee, you can do that by going to socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening.
Podcast Network.